Great day, amazing human. Yes, welcome to Empowered Up My Skin podcast, where our mission is to help 1 billion people in this world think in more empowering ways. Empowered humans empower humans. So you are in the right place to become a lead domino for empowerment today. My name is Nkechi Mwafa Robinson. I'm not only your host, but I am a vibrant optimist obsessed to bring you empowering content with every single episode. We will bring you weekly content alternating between longer episodes with featured guests and a shorter episode called Empowering Bites, where I will be joined by my co-host, Gabby Memone. So if you're ready, let the show begin. Great day, amazing humans, and yes, welcome to the next episode of Empowered My Skin, the podcast. So for all you YouTubers, I know you can see the amazing human that I'm actually looking at right now, but to anyone that's listening, today's guest is truly a force of nature. I had the pleasure of meeting them on the continent of Africa at Jitex Africa in Morocco that took place when was that? April? Anyway, they are a refugee turned global tech leader, strategist at YouTube, which totally fascinated me because I was like, oh my God, that's like the coolest job. And a champion for African innovation. From surviving civil war to shaping the digital future, our guest is bringing Silicon Valley and Silicon Savannah with purpose and power. He leads with heart, builds with vision, and still finds time to scuba dive and rock climb. And so get ready for a story that is as bold as it is brilliant. Like I remember listening to him. Like I think I closed my mouth, but I felt like my mouth was like open and on the floor, like just completely captivated by his story and his brilliance in storytelling. So really, really excited to have him on this platform. So please join me in a big, gigantic, huge podcast welcome for Augustine Wea.
That was impressive. I did not expect that. That was impressive.
What did you expect? You're brilliant.
I don't know. I expected, you know, like reading, but like the character got into it. The energy was there. Wow. I need to meet this guy.
Right? Isn't that how you're supposed to feel after like somebody reads your bio? Yes. Like, I usually say, my God, who's that girl?
Yes. I need to meet Augustine. So let's go talk to him.
Let's go talk to him today. I love it. I love it. And so a little bit of B-roll, we're going to just hitch over to the side where both he had his Maasai blanket on his chair. And I was like, whoa, is that custom? And he said, no, it's just my blanket. And I was like, but I have a blanket. He's like, go and get your blanket. So we're both blanketing and I'm keeping
it. You have to get the Maasai blanket when you have it. Right. You have to show it every day, right. Daily. And yeah, for me, it was just my 2025 kind of statement, yeah. Given all the things that's happening, just like, I'm here. I could be loud about it, but I'm here. And you will see this if you want to meet with me. You might ask a question about it and I'll tell you, but you can't help it. You have to look at it.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, just maybe don't come to the meeting with me, I guess.
And I think that's what I really loved about that you shared. And I just want to double click on that before I go to my first question, but it's like, we're so much in this virtual world and I think the essence of what you shared, which made me actually run upstairs and go and get, and by the way, these are authentic because they're both from Kenya, was that you said like, you're going to be virtual and the space that you're in should reflect who you are as a human being.
And I mean, let me tell you this.
Tell me.
You can see you can see behind me. Mm-hmm. I intentionally wanted my background to be surrounded by faces of Black women. Mm. And so when you look at the art behind me, not only are there portraits from Black photographers, but they are of Black women. Mm. And they are Black women in beautiful, sexy state, reflective state, mothering, caring state. And so the environment completely matters. Mm-hmm. And I come to this office, I'm in my home, I work remote, and it can be daunting to just sit in the room and just sit here, do it all year, mm-hmm. do it 24 hours a day. But when I walk in this room, I always feel a semblance of comfort. Mm-hmm. To my left, there are other two Black faces, Black women. Mm-hmm. Mandela is here. Mm-hmm. And so you have to surround yourself with things that mm-hmm. hopefully remind you,
uplift you.
Mm-hmm. to do the things that you care about. And mm-hmm. sometimes you won't care about the core work. Other mm-hmm. times you were coming here with emotions from outside. Mm-hmm. And if the space is set up to keep you coming, then at least when you're sitting here, you can reflect, you can think, and hopefully make one step, one progress as you go. So that's my thinking about it. People come and like, oh, your art. I'm like, yes, it was beautiful. I know. Cause you know, dope things. That's just what it is. It's not surprising, but it was intentional to have specifically dark black women mm-hmm. in art yeah. behind me, around me.
Yeah. I'm going to say something else too, because right now I changed the configuration of my office. So my desk used to be on that side. And so there are two beautiful arts here, and one by artists. You got to check them out. Benny Bing. So shout outs to Benny Bing. Benny Bing, B-I-N-G. But it's called the Kandake.
Kandake.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It's a woman of countenance and strength and character. Yeah.
Wow.
Right. Okay. And then I have another one called Maya. And Maya meant... Maya was like a quiet force, because it's funny because her image, she's facing this way. But it's like you see gentleness, you see like quietness, maybe mistaken meekness, but don't get it twisted. That face turns and it's strength and it's right. And so what I didn't realize at the time during COVID, when I put the pictures up finally, because I recognized my background was blank, I was struggling with self-doubt.
Wow.
And so every day I had in my vision Kandake and Maya. And I was getting coached one day by this amazing coach called Naki. So shout out to Naki. And she said, go and stand beside the picture behind you that gives you the most amount of strength. And I went to the Kandake. And that's when we looked it up. And I found out it was Benny Bing and it was Kandake. And that's where I got that's when I understood what the Kandake meant. And when I say to you, the fact that I looked at it every single day through my camera, I promise you, 6, 7, 8 months down the line, just seamlessly to me, doubt went away. Like the imposter syndrome, there's nothing imposter about me. You know what I mean?
That's the power of art, right? And oftentimes people don't get to experience the benefit of it because we're so used to just moving about daily in our lives. My house is surrounded in art. Mm. I started becoming a collector maybe 3-4 years ago.
That's awesome.
And we talk about, one of the projects that I'm working on down the road. But for me, it was just like, okay, I like something, but I want it to inspire me daily. Mm-hmm. And obviously, art consumption can seem or can be portrayed as a thing of money, mm-hmm. but you can find beauty in mm-hmm. art, mm-hmm. in any mm-hmm. kind of art. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's the trees, the plants, the gardens, or just walking, getting outside, there's so much beauty in nature. And just given the way my life has shaped or was shaped, I look to nature for some of those things. And I remember, I don't even know where this came from, but I had this analogy that I would use and say, the animals don't panic when the seasons change. Like birds need the leaves to protect their nest, mm-hmm. but the winter comes and they're bare and they're exposed mm-hmm. and it's colder, mm-hmm. but they understand these are seasons. Mm-hmm. And so when you're going through life, mm-hmm. whether it's you're in the valley or you're lower, mm-hmm. you have to understand, you have to look at some people look at the circadian mm-hmm. Rhythm, but nature gives you all, right?
Right.
We're in spring. I live in Charlotte, right. North Carolina. My trees are like full blown green. The grass is green. But 4 months ago, it wasn't.
Yeah.
And you have to just understand in this time, yeah. perhaps the more aware you are, you can develop the mm-hmm. skills and tools you need in that moment. And art gives you that. Because in art, there's a static thing that never changes. And it helps remind you. I bought a piece from a Cameroonian artist, original piece named Sessie. I went to an exhibition in San Francisco. And it was this boy, like his signature is big poppy eyes, one big poppy eye. And there was this dark skinned black boy just with a salute and the smile that's just stuck on his face. And I saw it. I loved it. I didn't have the money to pay for it. But, I'll tell you one secret sauce. If you know the artist, reach out to them and let them know how much you care about their art.
And they give you free art?
No, you pay for it.
Okay. But
You would pay for it, but you would pay for it at the artist's rate. The thing is, if you see an art in a museum, there's a 75% markup.
Yeah.
Because the museum got to get it cut.
Yeah.
The distributor or like the representative, everybody got to get their cut. So the artist is probably seeing about 20-25% of that value.
Yeah. So but they'd rather you buy directly from them. Yeah.
They can sell you their art direct. And so that's what I've been doing with the few pieces that I have. But it was just magical. And I look at that piece every day. You can't wipe the smile away from that young boy.
Yeah.
It's stuck in art. And I get reminded about that. And obviously, like, the emotions change when I engage with it.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm just growing in that space to love and appreciate art.
I love that. Do me a favor. Check out Benny Bing.
Benny Bang. I'll check it out.
BENNYBING. He's actually Nigerian. Yeah, check him out. Yeah.
African art is not on the rise, but having a resurgence.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it.
Yeah. Benny. Yeah, Benny. BENNY. Bing. BING. Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. So I love the organicness. So I'm going to just ask you, what is the most empowering thought that you've had of the day so far?
Today?
Yeah. This day.
I woke up happy.
Oh.
And in part because, I mean, I had like some heavy, you know, past few days just dealing with my own emotions in my head, you know. But my team won last night. We're 2-0 in the Western Conference Final, Oklahoma City. I'm wearing a jersey.
By the way, I'm just going to say this. We had a previously scheduled podcast interview. And was it the day of?
It was the day of. I mean, to be fair, it was game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. And I wouldn't have been in a good mood.
I hear you. He said I would have been. He was very honest. He said I would have been distracted during the interview.
I just wouldn't. And so I'd rather just let you know. And look at where we are. We are in the finals.
We are.
We're 2 games up. I'm in a great mood and I'm happy. And you asked me about what thought did I have today. Probably not today, but over the past couple of days, my nephew graduated high school. And I turned 35 2 Sundays ago,
okay,
I think.
Happy. Yeah. What was that date?
May 4th.
Oh, yeah. I think I told you. So mine was May 4th. May the 4th be with you. My anniversary. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm getting to that point where I'm a real uncle. You know, I've always been an uncle, but, you know, I'm an uncle to college going nephews, you know, and then my niece graduated from the 5th grade. And so there's a lot of reflectionary moments when, you know, I have all of their pictures on my phone. Mm. So I can just with a tap scroll to see when Aaliyah, my favorite human in the world, was saying vanilla for vanilla. And, you know, I've been around, you know, some of my friends or parents, and they talk about capturing and relishing those moments when a child's voice or speech is different. Because the moment is gone, you can't get it back. Mm. You know, the moment she says, oh my God, you know, vanilla ice cream. And that goes away and she recognizes it's vanilla. You would never hear vanilla. Mm. And so I've just been in this grateful, you know, positive state. Yeah. Nephew going to college, you know, I'm excited for that. Niece going to middle school. And funny enough, I was watching a short Instagram video on cell phone uses with kids. Mm. And my niece got grounded and her mom took away her phone. And unlike any other 10-year-old, she's thriving and she actually doesn't mind her grounding time being longer because she's reading more.
Wow.
My sister sends me a picture of her meditating on the trampoline in the backyard.
Okay.
And it's just like, you take away the phone, you take away the toys, and she's making her own breakfast at 10. She's like climbing on the roof window to read and sit there and like take in like the trees around her. And
but that takes a certain upbringing because there are a lot of kids that losing their phone would be like tantrum life altering. Right. So I love that.
I mean, it's just been a very positive kind of few days and hours leading up to today. And so not specifically a thought today, but I came into the day recognizing that I'm in a happy mood. Yeah. And so
I love that. I love that. So I want to, so what captivated me about you, and I think it's just so profound, is you told your story about from refugee camp to sort of where you are now, like Silicon Valley leader. And I don't want to give it any more than that. I love you to tell that story the way you love to tell it the most, so that we can get to know you better.
Yeah. So I'll start in Silicon Valley and then pivot back to the early days. I started therapy, I think around maybe 2019, 2020. And one of the things, it was a Black woman therapist. One of the things that I took away from my first session, she said something that was profound, and she said, you know, the skills and tools you needed to survive, you don't need anymore. And so this level of independence, this level of like, I can do all things by myself, you needed that to survive as a kid. But today you don't. And so if you don't shed those skin, if you don't let those things go, you will find yourself still struggling. And so I'm not saying that to say that I've shed all the skin, but it's just a really good point to think about my journey and my narrative, because when I was 3 years old, we had to flee the Liberian Civil War. And no three-year-old wake up and think about fleeing. And there's something about memory that really sticks with you when trauma happens. And sometimes, you know, I struggle with, are they real memories or are they just made up memories? Because I remember I loved school and I still do, even though I don't see myself going back to organic school. But we had a good life, and a demarcation of that good life. My mom has a picture of us in 1992. And there was a solar panel in the yard in 1992, Monrovia, Liberia, white picket fence, grass is all green. You can walk barefoot, big yard. So life was good. If you look at history and people show you archives and pictures, you can deduce from certain things how people were living at the time. And so it cemented in my mind the memory I had about going to school with my dad holding my hands. So if they were made up, then it was a really good made up to match that narrative. But life was good. And then suddenly it wasn't, you know, you start to figure out this is not what I'm used to. And so we fled the war. My dad was in the government or working in some high role. And so if you are in the war environment, for folks who haven't experienced it, typically the establishment is what is targeted. And so anyone that has the potential to inspire or work with administrations to orchestrate whatever, they come after you to dismantle that, and then whatever happens next. And so at an early age, I was displaced in this kind of movement-filled world. I remember my dad also helped me with this memory. We went to my grandfather's village. We were there for like maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then ended up fleeing, you know, over the St. Paul River. That's the river connecting Ivory Coast to Liberia. But Ivory Coast is French-speaking. We are English speaking. Sierra Leone is English speaking, but the war came from that region. So Ghana had a dedicated land by the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, UNHCR for short. And so that's where we fled. My mom is Ghanaian. She's half Ghanaian, half Liberian. And so it kind of made sense, I guess, for the adults at the time to move there on the refugee camp. But when I started to recognize that I was a living kid, like, you know, I was in the refugee camp, and that's where life started. And so today people are able to see the lives of refugees. People didn't see the lives of refugees back in the 90s. Mm. And I remember there were just moments of terror, like that just happened every day or like every month. You know, we had this bulletin up front in the, I guess, like the center of the camp. And I share more about that experience with you here that I don't share in other places. But almost every month or so, you see like a missing person will go, it's like, oh, this person is missing. And then 2 weeks later, you will see a picture of their dismembered body, trying to ask people to identify if this was their, you know, family member. And so I talk about how expendable you are when your civility is taken away as refugees. If people needed sacrifices and they needed like human sacrifices, who's expendable, would the Rum refugee kind of, in the camp, go pick up somebody. The world doesn't care about these people. And so life was pretty much that. There's a innocence of being a kid and you don't really fully understand some of the complexities and the constraints that you have as a refugee. And then there was the agonizing reality of growth. Because as you start growing, you start recognizing your limitations, right? And for me in particular, some of those limitations came through school. I've always been sort of a, I guess, nerd or something like that. And so to find myself in a Silicon Valley space years later, it's not all that surprising. But I loved school and I got a promotion from kindergarten one to first grade. And there was kindergarten two that I skipped. And then when I was in fifth grade, the teachers was like, yeah, I don't know if sixth grade is going to do you any good. So we're just going to take it to the seventh grade. And I've always kind of been that kid just excited about learning. But then when you're a refugee on a refugee camp, what do you do with that? You know, and so my mom early on, you know, identified some of my gifts and she put me in computer school because I was just curious about it. And I was just like, hey, the world is changing. There's this thing called typewriter and computers. Remember when you used to pay for internet cafe at an internet cafe?
Yes.
You know, yes. So like we'll get like some money. I'll go to the internet cafe, pay my money for 60 minutes of internet time. It's actually kind of wild. Yeah. Like thinking about it, right? The ubiquity of internet today is so crazy from when I was seven,
but there's
eight,
still
nine.
Pockets of that when you think about it.
There
is. You pay for it on the plane.
There
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
You pay for it on the plane. Yeah. But I think there are even actual places where people are still doing
yes,
that.
Yes, yes.
But that was transformational for me because yeah. I could communicate. I could look up things. I could Google stuff. Maybe not Google at the time. And all of that really kind of resonated and it kind of piqued my interest and I was always going. And I think some guy told my mom like, hey, Charity, that's my mom's name. You should get this boy into, you know, like typing school. Cause like typing is the thing. So she got me enrolled in a typewriting.
And where would you have been at this point?
Bundaberg refugee camp.
Okay. Still. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still in the camp. Okay. Like mm-hmm. I didn't leave the camp from 93 to 2006. So 13 years of my life was spent in the refugee camp. Okay. I grew up. Mm-hmm. Like I came into adolescence or adolescence, as some to call it. And so to make a long story short, my mom leaned into that because she trusted that if I liked it and it was about education in school, like I would do well. So she put me into a typing school. And then I graduated from that. And the teacher said, you should get him into computer typing because that's the future. And I remember there was, you know, computer typing, what's the future, right? Like not on the typewriter. And so I remember there was a program called Mavis Beacon. And I'm sure many people who started typing on the computer used that. And it had a thing. It's almost like the quick brown fox jump.
Yeah,
over the
I remember that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But in Mavis Beacon, they had a thing that became a life's mantra till today. They tell you to type accuracy is better than speed. Mm. So when you're typing, usually like once you kind of like pick up on some things, you try to type too fast, but the words that you were typing was accuracy is better than speed. Mm-hmm. And what it was doing in a literal and metaphorical sense is if you slow down and do things the right way, eventually you will become the best at it. Yeah. And because it's so familiar, you end up doing it faster. Yeah. Than the average person who is not putting, I mean, like there's all these metaphors that, you know, correlate. Kobe talked about you not shooting in the gym with me or like the 10,000 hours. It was the same thing happening. And so from there, my mom put me into computer school. When I was 11, I would go from Bundaberg refugee camp to Accra. I don't know the miles, maybe like 34 kilometers or something as a kid, 11 years old. So putting my life at risk, right? In pursuit of education and in hope that someday this education would pan into something. Mm-hmm. On top of all of that, my dad is missing. Like he left us in the 1997, which led to a lot of, you know, traumatic experiences for us and for my mother. So there's this entire world on the compounding impact of insecurity, like literally being insecure, not internally, but also internally, because as a kid, I stuttered. So this, what we are doing here,
this is
a miracle.
Okay.
If you see my 11-year-old self, this is a miracle. I couldn't speak. I couldn't say things.
If I can just pause for a second, there are some incredible orators in this world, like Maya Angelou, silent for how many years and stuttered. T.D. Jakes apparently stuttered, right? Like, I think, like, those are magnificent stories. So, wow.
Yeah. And I still do, you know, but it's now like, oh, the guy at Google, and he's like thinking about what he's trying to say, right? But as a kid who doesn't have a father around, growing up and watching your friends go missing every day, going to dumpster to like pick up tin cans to build cars, playing in dirt, swimming in like dirt ponds, just being a kid. And then when you needed money, what do? You're a boy. You got to go work. You go sell kerosene. You go sell ice blocks. You sell Kool-Aid. You sell like food in the market. You push wheelbarrows. You do all these things. And it's normal that because that's life, everyone else around you is going through the same thing. So it was just, you don't realize until you step away from it that, wow. You know, Kanye has a song. I know he's a controversial, you know, topic, but it talks about I'm full 5 seconds from wilding. I got three more days to Friday. I mean, I'm pretty sure we were about 6 to 8 months from just accepting the realities of this is where our life is going to end and be here. And so very fortunate that was able to immigrate to the United States as a refugee, you know, trying to reclaim asylum here. And yeah, the U.S. for all of its, you know, complexities breathe new life into this brain of a child that read Napoleon Hill when he was 11. Part of what kept me, I think, sane as a kid was I was curious about the world around me. So I would read often. And it would expand my imagination into what was possible. I read the stories of, you know, Carnegie and S.B. Fuller, those guys that were selling newspapers and then turned that into, you know, empires, or the stories about your talisman, choosing PMA, positive mental attitude and negative mental attitude, and how both of those can work in your favor, or like the reinforcement policies, or like how you can leverage your situations as reinforcements for you to do well. And you can pull that from positive reinforcement. So like as a kid, 11, 12, these are the things that I'm learning, ingested into myself, because mind you, I've been told that I would be the president one day. So
who told you that?
Everybody.
Okay. I love it.
You know, so I'm like, I have to live up to this. Like, if I'm going to be the president, I have to be smart. I have to be educated. I have to be well-spoken. And I have to know things.
So you have to figure it out. You have to figure
it out. So, like, innately behind me, I think people was just encouraging a smart young kid to keep going. Yeah. But I was also excited about it, because when I learned something new, it excited me, right? Mm-hmm. Even to today, you know, I just bought a 2003 car, so it's like 22 years old, and I just got fascinated with like fixing the cooling system, and I took it to AAA, and they're like $600. I'm like, bruh, no, I'm gonna do this myself. Guess where I went? YouTube, figure it out. Cars running smooth as day, and it's one of the most exciting things I've done in the past month. Fixing the car with my hand that I sit in if you're comfortable driving. So anyways, but yeah, so that's how life started, right? Just kind of arching back. Disruption at a very early age. And then this kind of pocket of time where a lot of things are in there, right? Abuse, you know, fascinating growth experiences, engagement with, you know, religion in a way that, you know, caused separation, or just finding confidence in self in a world where you're a skinny, stuttering kid without structure, without father, without the support that other people have. And then moving to America, this vast place of opportunity, yet realizing that you are at the bottom of the totem pole again. And so the journey to where life is, obviously today it looks easy and it looks like, well, of course you were destined to be there given how you show up today. And in a way that's true, because without the obstructions in my way, maybe I'm in a better state or maybe I'm not. But I do know that where I am today, in a large part, had everything to do with the level of adversity and the way that I've navigated the adversities in my life. And so we talked earlier about recognizing dopeness, recognizing energies, recognizing these things. I move with a level of confidence that sometimes intimidate people because you haven't been where I've been. And I'm not saying that to like wish you to experience the things I've experienced, but you know, against all odds, I believe that I've risen from a place where many people, even my family members, right? We all experience the same environment in different ways. And the way that thing affected us, the way we responded to it has been different. And so,
and I love that. I think that that is so testament. Like if I, like, and sometimes you can't even put a name on it or an understanding around it, but there's a, and I'm going to just not use the word confidence, but there's a way that people who I'm going to say move, I don't know how else to describe at the spiritual, it's a spiritual plane. Like it's a plane in life where it's like, you just know that your life has a purpose and a meaning behind it, irrespective of whatever the world around you is happening, that you walk this earth differently.
I think that that's true. I believe that's true. And sometimes you run away from that because it feels too burdensome.
Yeah.
And other times you embrace it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why everybody doesn't become MVP in the basketball league. Everybody doesn't win the most valuable player in like the Champions League. The person that rises to the moment, and I'm not saying that I'm an MVP in that light, but what I'm saying is the characteristics that you need to succeed in life, it's molded in the daily kind of navigation of the struggles that's before you. And to be fully transparent, I'm navigating challenges today that in many ways are huge because they're all mental now. They're not like, okay,
they're not real. They're not physical.
Yeah. They're not in front of you. And so, but I'm leaning into the fact that, you know, a lot of what I've experienced, though the environment was constrained, was all mental. You know, because I look at kids today navigating challenges and the way they respond to it, it's not necessarily how I responded to my challenges. I wanted to like crush it. I wanted to like go after it. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to argue with me in spelling? Bro, do you know who I am? Like, I would walk around and spell stuff with my finger in the air. Like, what do you mean you know how to spell photosynthesis? You know, spell chlorophyll, right? Like, you know, like doing all these things, but I would come at you mentally. And then today I'm struggling with this fatigue and, you know, part of being in the space for 9 years. And I'm like, okay, I need a break. But then I've always been a hard worker. I've always, you know, like, plow through. And so there are different challenges and nuances to how you respond to things. But in most cases, rising to the occasion takes a lot of mental fortitude. Yeah. That occasion, you know, could be a graduation or it could be just recognizing that you need rest.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I say you are someone who I think epitomizes, I've taken more out of adversity and adversity has taken out of me. And so would love to, but what did I say earlier? I said, typically I like to wind down.
Let's keep going.
But then
Let's
you get a going. Point, you get a point. We're going to keep going. So I want to start, I would love to double click now on what sort of the adversity, because that was the next thing that really fascinated about me to you. And I think also what brought you a bit on the JITEX stage, you know, is how you've, what you're unlocking from, I'm going to say connecting purpose to the journey that you've had to, or still navigating in life. And maybe you could talk about some of the things that are unlocking that are now benefiting others. I think it's like, get ready world. Listen to this.
You know, for the longest, I've been running away from a few things. in life, we try to like beef up our weaknesses. I think people tell you that, like, oh, if you're weak in this thing, go get better at it. And oftentimes, those are really good advice for young people. And so to be more well-rounded. And I found that I've been trying to beef up my weaknesses, that my strengths are also just like, bro, like, come back to me, you know? And throughout this entire experience of mine, it's just been connecting with people. You know, the kid that couldn't talk, you know, was a huge connector then, you know, and the kid that can speak freely is a huge connector now. But I thought, or society told me, that if I'm not strong in these other areas, then I'm not good enough. So I need to beef up the technical. I need to beef up the understanding of this and that. And it all comes down to the same thing. The reason I've been successful in all the spaces that I've been in is because I was able to connect and articulate myself.
Yeah.
Go figure, right? Yeah. Articulating myself. And so recognizing that over the past couple of years to kind of pull me back into eliminate the weakness build. like there's too many people in this world that if I'm not good at something, somebody is going to be really good at it. You know, I'm not going to tell you I need to beef up my ability to understand, you know, quantum theory. Like, I don't need to know that. And I would run away from it because there's somebody who is just as passionate about that or more passionate, that if I ask them a question here, they would like excitedly tell me. So what I've been trying to do is just, how do I leverage this currency of mine, which is my connective tissue, to not only build, but connect communities and connect people. And so internally at Google, when I got to Google, very excited to be there, I got thrust into this leadership role to lead the Africans at Google community, which is a community of Africans working at Google. And I'm just like, okay, like, y'all want me to do that? And it just became this thing where over the years, people just gravitate towards me, or like I gravitate towards, you know, people, and really create spaces where people can not only feel comfortable, but see themselves. You know, I started this Jollof Cook-Off in San Francisco, where only the guys would cook and would talk trash, and 200 people come out, and people are like, 200 black people in San Francisco? Something must be going on. It's good food, good energy. But all of those things, I thought it was soft skills that weren't as important, because everybody tell you to like beef up the hard skills. And then it turns out we're in this very technical world where people are like, where are the soft skills? Who knows how to navigate ambiguity? Who can articulate visions? Who can talk about things in a way that the average person can understand? Yes, I need you to know how to do the technical stuff, but we got somebody who can do that really well. And so I've just really leaned into this stuff and try to understand where I can add value, recognizing that I'm no longer running away from this connective tissue that I have as a person. And so in my natural form, after about 7 years at Google, I thought I needed to diversify my identity and not just be the guy that works at Google. And so I found venture capital as a space that blended all of the things that I cared about. My entry into Google was as a recruiter, and as a recruiter at the highest level, you're going to find a needle in the haystack. And so that same approach was layered with your ability to connect with people. And so venture, early stage venture capital, is purely relationships. It's purely connection. So I'm finding that all the things that I've already been good at all this time is something that is truly needed in spaces where I can connect cultures, people, and opportunities. And so that's what, you know, led me into venture. And today I lead the deal team for the Black Angel Group. It's the one of the largest Black investment syndicates in the world. We have about 350 professionals from the biggest tech companies in the world. And we invest intellectual and financial capital into startups. Black founders, Asian founders, white founders, we look for amazing opportunities. And then Africa unlocked for me 2 years ago, because I've always wanted to go back home. I've always wanted to reconnect and try to redefine the narrative that was once a captive narrative to now a narrative of freedom and choice. And so I took a solo trip to Jamaica about 3 years ago, and people are like, why are you going to Jamaica by yourself? This is crazy. I'm like, well, I'm crazy. So I'm going to go to Jamaica by myself and drive around the island for 14 days and see if I come back. I'm back. So that means it's successful. But in the experience, I found that it's the same thing. It's people, it's community. And one experience stood out for me that unlocked Africa. I'm in St. Elizabeth, Black River to be specific. I'm at the Pelican Bar. It's the bar on the water where people go to. It's Instagrammable, all that stuff. Met this Canadian Jamaican lady. You're Canadian. And we just kicked it off. And we're talking. And I'm like, hey, can I come visit your house? Because I want to see how you're living. She talked about she's growing her food at home and, you know, raising, you know, livestock. And those are things that I care about and in the future I want to do. So I went there, saw her husband, the rabbits, the goats. It was fascinating. And I asked her, hey, can you please take me to the store so I can get some spices? Because I love to cook and I cook really well, if I do say so myself, you know. And she took me to this spot. And as we were getting stuff, there was an older lady, 80 plus years old. And she called her to come to me. And she said, look, he's one of us. And this lady is shorter than me. I looked at her and she like squeezed my cheeks. And she said, oh, look at you. You're one of us. Welcome home. And in that moment, it dawned on me that this idea that I should go everywhere else and spend my dollars or like experience culture and having not done that to Liberia in Africa, it just became clear that I needed to go back home. Yeah. And so going home in 2023 truly unlocked this passion to see how I can add value. This kid who was once told to be the president, who don't want to do that anymore, because I want to live longer and I want to keep scuba diving. It just really ignited this passion of mine to really find ways to connect. And on my trip to Liberia for the first time in 30 years, I organized a conference with some friends to bring 200 Liberians together, government, tech, agriculture, to talk at the intersection of innovation for the country. The following year, I went, you know, back to Africa. I was in Kenya, launched a venture summit called Silicon Exchange. And the goal was to kind of close funding gaps for Silicon, you know, Savannah founders and bridge them to the Valley in California. Today, I'm advocating immensely for African founders and trying to find pathways that we can not only bridge the technology gap, but bridge the education gap, bridge the funding gap, and bridge the mentor gap. Because everybody tells you Africa is the future. It's so somewhat kind of creepy when you hear people talk about Africa in the ways that's so capitalistic. But there are a lot of opportunities for kids like me who are selling, you know, water on the street that could turn out to be a better version of me. Yeah. And so how do we unlock opportunities within these creative minds to then create opportunities for others? So yeah. Leveraging this thing that I've always tried to like run away from, like the guy, you know, all you have is social skills and soft skills, to now be one of my biggest superpowers. And I feel so confident about where we are headed in the future. And yeah, so that's how I've been trying to connect purpose with opportunity. Yeah. And it's fueling me because I'm getting really excited talking about this. But yeah.
Well, you're exciting me as well, because I'm on a little bit of a similar pathway, and the trip to Morocco really started to unlock that. And very shortly, I'm going, like in a couple of weeks, heading to Jamaica for a trade mission, right? Like, and that just unlocked organically after coming back from Morocco. I didn't seek it. I didn't ask it. And so I'm like, okay, there's something God is telling me here. And what happens if I put a little bit more intention and purpose on this? And so thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And there's something I actually wanted to, I wanted you to finish, but there's something that you, when you started sort of that piece about strengths and weaknesses, I just want to invite something. It's a concept. It's not mine. It's actually from Simon Sinek, but I think it would resonate with you, where he says, like, do away with strengths and weaknesses. The truth is characteristics and attributes, right? Because when you know your characteristics and attributes, then what you should be doing is seeking those spaces where those characteristics and attributes are strengths.
Are amplified.
Right, amplified. Because the same characteristics and attributes you have in the wrong environment will be seen as a weakness, right?
Look, and when I let me just double tap on this really quick, and it's a funny analogy, but I grew up in Oklahoma City. When I came to the U.S., I went to an all-black high school, and you know, some of the spaces we share wasn't the safest. But what you learn as a high school kid is you learn to observe in those environments, and you know what's about to pop off. You know, for folks outside of America, when something's about to pop off, it's like some commotion is about to happen. But you just know that by paying attention. You know, when John walks in the room, when Day Day looks that way, when somebody twitched this way, you know what's about to happen. And you know the funny thing about all of that, which in that environment is a survival or like, oh my God, wrong environment. In the corporate space, in venture, these are quality skill sets that if you lean into somebody trying to tell you about their idea, you can look at how they're presenting. You, when you're engaging with someone, you can see how they're carrying themselves. You know when somebody's like twitching. And you can, it helps you make decisions in a different environment that amplifies growth and all these different things, or like decision making for the betterment of your goals. Whereas in another environment, it's like, oh man, something about to pop off. It's about to be crazy. You know, attributes and characteristics in the right environment and the wrong environment is something that's profound.
I love it. Wow. So first of all, you are such a delight to interview, because all I have to do is ask you like one question.
Sorry.
I love it. I'm giving that sorry back. I was as fascinated with you today as I was sitting at Jitex Africa in the investor lounge, leaning back and just, I felt like a kid at a campfire, just listening to an incredible, amazing story that inspires and uplifts. And so thank you for doing that again. I am going to get control of this interview now, though. But let me step back into the seat of interviewer. I am going to take you through what I call our rapid thrivers.
Okay.
And so when you think of someone who inspires you, who comes first to mind?
My mother.
And I know. So this one, this is another podcast episode.
And I'm happy to talk about her, because I think my mother, everybody says this about their mom, which everyone is entitled to, but to bear 6 children, be abandoned with them on the refugee camp and not run, and made sure that every one of us had the most important thing, life, and staying alive. If you meet my mother, you would be very surprised, because the things she's endured, I have not comprehend another human that I've met. And yet her joy is unwavering. And so she's stubborn, and that's just what it is. Like,
I love the pictures you shared of her. We love
Get annoyed, you know, but you know, when you sit back and you think about the things she's had to endure and how she's still strong and showing up for herself. Yeah, I just can't be more inspired than any other.
Thank you. What is a daily activity that helps you with your thrive?
Workout.
Okay, we talked about that earlier. Squat, pull, push. What is a book, a memorable book that has helped you with your thrive?
I'd say The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
I've been
listening to a lot of books recently, but Ta-Nehisi Coates, Water Dancer, it's a fictional book on the enslaved, and it really opened my eyes to the word enslaved versus slaves, because enslaved personalized the individual, and the book talks about the experience of enslaved Africans from the perspective of a daily person. Like, you're a woman, lives in Toronto, you have a life, you have emotions, you care about people, you get sad. And when you hear about the stories about enslaved Africans, nobody humanizes them. Nobody talked about, you know, Joanne probably, you know, had a crush on that boy down the street. And, you know, they had these fights, but he gave them superpowers. And so they were able to liberate themselves. And I found that to be the best written fictional book that I've read. And I've read it twice. And yeah, that always, always.
I love it that it's a new book. And for this 300, and I think you're 330. I think that's the episode. So first one, I love that. What is an app that helps you with your Thrive?
I hate apps. But
work for YouTube.
Yes, but I hate apps because I just get sucked into them. But YouTube, I'll say YouTube because
it's my favorite app. It's one of my favorite apps.
I spend period, a
you
lot
know
of
you
time.
Know what my favorite app is?
YouTube.
No.
What?
The period app.
Oh, the one that reminds you that you're not you're not going back.
The period, it tells you, like, you put everything in there, like a whole bunch of stuff. And actually, yeah, I love it.
It's like a calendar for your life, and it's so personalized.
It's very personalized. But anyway, go on. I digress. Go on.
No, YouTube, I'd say, because I check YouTube for just, I'm a sports buff, like Oklahoma City Thunder. And, like, I know it's boring, and it's like, cliche. But consuming content about the things that makes me happy keeps me happy. Yeah. And so, yeah. And I work at YouTube. So it's also
makes sense. Cool. You should like the product you work for. And as you move through life, what is one misconception that people have of you as they see you?
I think today people think I'm arrogant.
Okay. We kind of covered that earlier as to why.
Yeah. People think I'm arrogant, or like they think I think too much of myself. And I say, yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Because I do think too much of myself in a way that I won't, allow myself to go into spaces where I'm devalued. I won't allow myself to be in environments where you don't recognize the additive nature of my humanity.
Yeah.
And, you know, just truly choosing self.
Yeah.
You know, I went through a patch where I lost some strong friendships, and I had to ask myself, am I doing something wrong to lose these friendships? Or like people did things to me that caused me to end the friendships. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is it about me that people feel the need to like come at me this way? And it dawned on me, I don't think it's me. I think sometimes in spaces where you show up confidently, people's insecurity is louder and it causes them to react and project. And sometimes their projection comes out to be like physical or like through words. Mm-hmm. And they try to make you feel small. Mm. And, you know, my entire life, people have tried to make me feel small, whether it's intentionally using words to me or the spaces that I couldn't have access to. And so, I walk with my head very high. Yeah. And if you're bothered by that, you should ask yourself why, or maybe ask me why.
Yeah. I have to share something in this moment because I actually feel a lot of emotions coming up right now. Wow. So first of all, tomorrow, so to everyone on the podcast, you know, I batch my episodes. So tomorrow, May 24th, we're recording this on May 23rd. I'm hosting a leadership summit. It's called LEAD, LEAD, and LEAD stands for Learn, Elevate, Activate, and Disrupt. And the tagline has been, because real leadership doesn't follow the rules, it rewrites them, right? And what you just said about, like, and even just your retort, right? Like, you think a lot about yourself. And I think that that's, like, the most powerful thing I've, like, heard in a while. Yeah. In response, yeah, I do. And when you said that, like, it felt so, like, I want myself to be able to say that. Yeah, I actually do. Because that's the only way I can lead. Is because I'm learning about myself. I'm understanding myself. I'm being willing to push myself and pressure myself. And what you just talked about, right? Like, is and allow myself in the spaces that I occupy to be expressing myself at the highest possible level that I can for myself, because it contributes to the space in a way that nobody else can, because they're not me. Like, there was so much about what you just said there that really just resonated with me that I had to share. And it's not, and the reason I shared tomorrow's event is because how it came about was very divine. You canceled me on Sunday. No, it's true. You canceled me on Sunday, but we had this conversation on the eve of my event, and I feel like I needed to hear that because I think I'm taking your words to share at that event, because I almost feel like I should clip this and share it.
And I'm in a happier state to probably deliver it. Then it would have been a Sunday when my heart was in my hands, like, just close it out. Close out the game, please.
So I'm going to see if I can do this little bit of a production and actually clip this. And if I do, I will share it with you, because I think what you just said there is really powerful. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so now, where do we find more of you online?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'm in and out of Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. Okay. Augustine Wea. Yeah. I think I'm probably the only one with the
yes,
name.
Yes, yeah, I believe so. I believe
unless,
so.
Unless my dad is on. Yeah. You know.
Are you an Augustine Jr.?
Yeah. I'm an Augustine Jr. It's a funny story, okay. Right? My dad, I have three older brothers. Mm-hmm. And you know, the typical thing is the older son.
Yeah, gets the first. The first one gets the name. Yeah,
and it's a funny story. Apparently, you know, my dad and his shenanigans. You know, he had a junior, and my mom's like, "No, we're not going to do that," because my dad had a son, and that was not with my mom. And they had two other boys since, and they decided to not name him a junior. And so when I came, you know, I met my dad in 2023 in December in Liberia for the first time in 26 years. And so there was a lot of conversations about all the things. And I asked him about this. I'm like, why am I a junior, bro? Like, what do you mean? Like, I'm the youngest boy. He's like, you know, my dad is 3X what you think I am. Like, he's so charismatic. Like, okay. He would like take you to the moon and back, and probably why he was such a polarizing human, you know? And it's like, yeah, I just knew from the day you were born, like your mannerisms, I knew you would be a junior. And then I asked my mom for her version. She's like, I wanted my son to be the junior. So I took the name. So I tell you, my mother, you don't play with her. I was like, that's gangster, bro. Yeah. She was like, I took the name. You were my junior. No. Like, I was like, okay. No, seriously, my older brother name is now Augustus.
Okay. Now or it was?
Well, ever since I've been knowing him, his name is Augustus.
Okay.
And he's like maybe 10 years older than me. Yeah. So at some point, they changed his name and he didn't have a choice. Yeah. So, yes.
I love it.
But no, you can find me on LinkedIn, Augustine Wea. I'm on Instagram, _STINO. I'm the dark matter. I have a space on Facebook, but I'm not really there. I will say something about, we were talking earlier about art and things that I'm passionate about. I'm working on this project that's futuristic, building a world-class art residency in Monrovia, Liberia, with a friend of mine who's an artist who I'm a collector for. And it's one of the more exciting things that I've been involved with. We're just getting started. Found an architect out of Mexico City. Wow. I mean, this guy is phenomenal. So more to come. There's not like a recent date on this.
We'll follow you to make sure.
Yeah, in time, when you see yourself going to this small country called Liberia, mm-hmm. to go and visit the Bridge Residency,
you know,
you would know that you heard it here, and it came to fruition.
I love it. So as a final parting question, finish this sentence for us. I am empowered in my skin when?
When I feel like myself. Anytime I show up as myself, I think I'm my best self. And I try to maintain that consistency, because I recognize people look to me for things, and I need to be who I am first for myself. First for my, you know, for my family, for my loved ones. And whenever I show up as myself, it's validated. And it gives me that empowerment to keep going and keep going and doing the things that I love to do. So I try hard, actually, to maintain like who I am.
Yeah.
Because if you lose it, you just go down a windy path. Yeah. You know, I remember, it's hard to remember the many versions of yourself.
Yeah.
If you show up differently,
yeah.
And it's very easy to just show up as the one version of yourself that you know. And I found that to be true because if you meet a 2-year-old that knows me, or you meet the CEO of Google,
they'll both say the same thing.
They'll tell you, like, Augustine, that's Augustine. Like, the hoop-wearing African face, bald, my God, that shows up with energy all the time.
I love that. I love that. I love that. And I love you, and I appreciate you, and I'm so blessed that I came into your vortex, and thank God for Jitex Africa. Like,
Shout out to Jitex, because I'm still connecting with people from Jitex, and we're
like it is. I feel that's an unlocked life in a way. Like I didn't think possible or imagine. Like anyway, so much tentacles. For
I mean, when would you have a chance to meet a cool ass black woman on a Friday morning that lives in Toronto? You know, with an amazing gap, Nigerian. With the hair popping, where would you get a chance to do that if not meeting that Jitex
Africa, right? I think I was the only person with this hair color in the whole venue.
Your crew came. You guys came officially.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. You know, as an audience member to your show. It's like, okay.
I love it. Yeah.
The women of firewood,
the
right?
The firehood. Yeah.
The firehood came and they saw, and dare I say, conquered.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, honestly, for this very edifying experience with you and sharing energy with me. I love it. And to everyone that's listening, I trust you're like, no, don't finish, but everything's got to come to an end. But this is where we say, we're out. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There you have it. I trust that you are feeling more empowered in your skin. As the late Dr. Maya Angelou said, when you get, you give. When you learn, you teach. So it would mean so much for us at Empowered in My Skin, Inc. if you share this episode and tag us or teach an insight that you took from today's episode on your social and tag us. Feel free to leave us a review over at iTunes and follow us on social media at Empowered in My Skin. Finally, remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode.